Mr. Lowe, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Your Honor.
You may approach.
Please report, my name is Steve Lowe. I'm appearing on behalf of one of the appellants in this case. It is the S. Mr. Jensen is going to be appearing as an appellant as well for his client. That would be Tom M. And Ms. Amy is going to be appearing on behalf of the state.
And so you're going to take 5 minutes? Is that?
That was going to be my next question. I think we'll split the time. What we're here asking you all to take a look at is the reasons. It's a termination of parental rights case. The parents initially started out with a what we'll call a dirty house situation. And there were some other difficulties that were encountered. They tried, I think, their level best to comply with the rehabilitative plan that was put forth by the Department of Health and Human Services, and ultimately they admitted the contents of the petition, which was the dirty house situation, and the Buffalo County Court conducted, I think, 6 review hearings of the matter, and ultimately a petition to terminate their parental rights were filed. For my client, Brandy S., she was determined to have certain mental difficulties that were going to interfere with her ability to act as a parent, and 15 out of the last 22 months was a concern for the county court in an out-of-home placement situation, and we also have for Ms. S., her inability to comply with the rehabilitative plan. And I'm just going to ask you to take a look at the evidence in this case. Her efforts to meet the expectations of the Department of Health and Human Services in order to effectuate a reunification, I think, were pretty good. She did what she could do. She was having difficulty with medication compliance, and she changed from Abilify, which didn't seem to be helping her much, to Lamictal, which did seem to be helping her a lot. She changed therapists at that point in time. She had her own personal therapist, and she went to a lady by the name of Kathleen White, who suggested during this approximately 2-year period family therapy. Family therapy is defined as an ability of therapists. The children had their own therapist, by the name of Pam Trantham, and my client's therapist. They were never able to get together to discuss what might be best for these children, which I think is a little bit odd. I mean, if you have a therapist that is working with 2 children, the children's ages at the time were, I wrote it down, I believe 6 and 4 at the time we started this. Their therapist determined that the children were not ready yet to engage in family therapy, which is, I think, an essential component. When you have a therapist that you're working with that says, this lady has now progressed far enough to enable her to at least begin to participate with her own children, I mean, that's kind of what we're here talking about, is to have the children's therapist say, they're simply not ready yet.
At what point in time
to engage.
Was this not ready conversation?
It was towards the end of the relationship. I'm going to say this petition was filed in 2011, and I believe that Kathleen White's involvement was in the fall of 2012. So it was fairly late in the relationship.
But, so at that point, the children are 8 and 7, 8 and 6?
Roughly, right, because they're 9 and 7 now, I believe. So approximately a little over a year ago, yes, that's right.
Did the judge in this case make specific findings as to the fitness of your client to be a parent?
Overall, yes, he did. Yeah, that's in the order. It is. She happens to disagree with those specific findings. So there are also issues that Mr. Jensen is going to address with you all concerning the use of hearsay statements made by kids, which is particularly concerning not only to Mr. Jensen, but myself as well. I think that's what we're all here for today. So I'm going to let Mr. Jensen talk to you next. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen, good morning.
Good morning. Your Honors, may it please the Court. The reason we're here today is about fairness and whether or not the family subject to this action was treated fairly by government action. In March 2011, the children in this case were removed from the house, and the parents were told, you got a dirty house, clean it up. And a petition was filed by the state of Nebraska saying you got a dirty house. The parents admitted we have a dirty house. The house was cleaned. That wasn't an issue for the balance of the case.
What was the adjudication?
The adjudication was regarding a dirty house.
So that they were living in a cluttered environment?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor.
Then what was the plan for resolving this particular problem?
Well, the plan was put in place. There were workers put in place helping the parents clean up the house, and ultimately the house was cleaned up within a few weeks.
What were the other purported deficiencies of the parents?
That was it at the adjudication.
And thereafter, in the course of the subsequent dispositional hearings, and so
after the adjudication, another issue arose, and that was Nicole's, or specifically, was reporting abuse to her counselor, Pam Trantham. Sandra was, to some extent, and there are just a few specific instances of those abuse, which you'll find in the record. Nicole said, "I was being slapped all over my body by my mother," things like that.
You want to get to the hearsay issue?
I do. And that's the question: is the due process clause, does it tolerate parental rights being terminated by a court on the strength of hearsay alone? And if you look at the judge's March 26th journal entry and order, the parental rights are terminated only primarily on the strength. There are a few other issues, but primarily on the strength of those allegations of abuse brought by.
Let's start with the statutory framework. But before that, what does the statute say with respect to rules of evidence at a termination hearing?
Absolutely. Now, back in 1978 in the Duran and Bailey case, which is cited in Tom's brief, the Nebraska court presumptively treated, the Nebraska Supreme Court presumptively treated a termination hearing as dispositional. And so after an adjudication, that was the parents' last shot at having the rules of evidence apply in any hearing thereafter. So they're adjudicated on a dirty house case, issues of abuse, hearsay. The only source of abuse in this case is hearsay statements by the children.
What does the statute say? You've referred to case law.
Yes, Your Honor. The statute says a dispositional hearing, 43-283, says a dispositional hearing says strict rules of evidence shall not apply. And I believe that's the issue in this case, is should a termination hearing be treated, it's a judicial characterization, should it termination hearing be treated as a dispositional hearing under the juvenile law.
How did the disposition hearing morph into a termination hearing?
I believe a termination hearing is treated as something different under the Due Process Clause, under Santosky and Lassiter and other United States Supreme Court precedent. The Nebraska Supreme Court and the courts can call a termination hearing a dispositional hearing, but I believe that's an incorrect characterization. The Due Process Clause says we need certain procedures in place here, severe error-reducing procedures in place to make sure that that process is fundamentally fair.
So what do you want us to do here, declare the statute unconstitutional?
No, I'm not asking you to declare 43-283 unconstitutional, and as Justice Shanahan said in his concurrence in In Re CW back in 1992, he says, you know, 43-283 is a dispositional hearing for purposes of a juvenile adjudicated under the juvenile code is specific to that individual. He commits trespass or something. And then we're going to use that as the disposition to dispose of that adjudicated offense. The legislature did not intend for a termination hearing to be considered dispositional.
And since that time, the legislature has not seen fit to change the law. Correct?
They have not, at least at this point. But treating a termination hearing as dispositional was a judicial characterization. All I'm asking is that we don't apply 43-283 to a termination hearing because...
How do we treat reports?
Reports in a dispositional hearing?
In a termination hearing.
I believe those should be considered hearsay, Your Honor. I believe that if we've got hearsay statements...
Well, we've already decided that, haven't we, in JKB in 1987?
I believe that has been decided, and he said we're going to... let those in, but I believe that the due process...
So is there any difference between reports and live hearsay by a witness?
I believe that at a termination hearing, those reports, they're fine for a review hearing, a dispositional hearing, a juvenile case, but the due process clause in the United States Supreme Court precedent says those reports are hearsay. And we can't, we have to, the state has to prove their evidence to a clear and convincing standard. It's a wonder to me that we can have clear and convincing hearsay. The Nebraska Supreme Court recognizes the standard is clear and convincing evidence. The state must prove their case to a clear and convincing standard, which, to get to that point, the United States Supreme Court said, there's a New York case, Santosky, that says, we're going to use a preponderance of evidence standard with the rules of evidence in place. The United States Supreme Court said, that's not enough. Even with the rules of evidence in place, preponderance is wrong because it considers a quantity of evidence rather than a quality.
Assuming that we agree with your position, is there any evidence, because our review is de novo, is there any evidence in there that would justify by clear and convincing evidence termination?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. There are some mental health issues raised by against the mother. The termination of the father's rights was failure to protect the children from abuse by the mother. Again, the only source of abuse was hearsay statements. I don't, and anything raised about mental health of the mother, medication compliance, anything like that, the state failed to link that to harm to the children.
Well, but before you even get to a dispositional hearing, would you have to have an adjudication that there was abuse as opposed to clutter in the house? Would you have to have a new determination adjudicated that the parents were abusing the children?
Interestingly, I mean, before the state moves to terminate parental rights, they have to file a whole new petition. So we adjudicate the children under the dirty cows.
Right.
And then we have, then the state has to file a whole new petition. Summons is issued. New issues are raised. Notice of hearing is sent out. The parents are summoned to court for an entirely new hearing. And yet, because we've had an adjudication, we don't apply rules of evidence to this whole new set of issues. And we have a vital interest at stake here that the relationship between a parent and child is considered of primary importance under the Due Process Clause. But because we've had this adjudication in the Dirty House, all of a sudden all these new issues about abuse, the hearsay source of all these things, can be disposed of by the court without applying the rules of evidence.
What is your proposal?
My proposal is that this court overrules the guideline language saying the rules of evidence are guidelines in these termination hearings and declare that the rules of evidence do apply or should be applied to satisfy due process. It doesn't require the overruling
of
statute.
And the way and the mechanism that you're proposing is that if the court were to recast termination as something other than dispositional, all of these things would fall into place?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that if the court says the rules of evidence, and now under the statute, there's no definition of a dispositional hearing. There's no reason, no authority to treat a termination hearing as dispositional. 43.283 does not define what a dispositional hearing is.
We're working with this statute out there, are we not?
I understand, Your Honor. Okay. Yes, you're correct.
And therefore, your proposal is a workaround, because you're not attacking the constitutionality of the statute, as I understand.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. I believe that the termination hearing is defined by the statutes 43.291 through 295. A termination hearing is something completely different.
In this case, did you not have due process?
No, there was no due process in this case, Your Honor, because if you read the journal entry and order issued by the court, the primary reason the court terminated parental rights in this case was based on allegations of abuse by the mother and failure to protect from that abuse by the father, who never saw abuse in the home, he testified. The only source of abuse is the hearsay statements of a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old to their counselor. And that's the only source of abuse in this case. And I don't believe that withstands to the fundamentally fair procedures outlined by Santosky in the United States Supreme Court. We need something more, severe error-reducing procedures before we're going to terminate this precious relationship between a parent and a child, because of the interest endowed in the children as well as their parents, as the government and fair to this family, to a clear and convincing standard. And I don't believe that's taken place. No further questions. Thank you, Your Honor, for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Amy, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor. Not quite sure where to start with all of this. Essentially, I'll start with Mr. Lowe's argument and regarding Randy S. What we have there is a number of issues with Ms. S. Not complying with her case plan throughout the case. If the court will look on the record, there's testimony that we had voluntary services in place even prior to the filing of the case in March of 2011. So we've had approximately from February 2010 up to the filing of the case in March of 2011 of some services in the home to alleviate the problems addressed with the family. They're correct, as this was a dirty home when the children were first removed. However, immediately upon removal, other issues were uncovered, including the mother's mental health issues, abuse that was going on in the home, and those sorts of things. I think upon the court's de novo review of the record, everything is not as rosy as Brandy S. and Tom M. want you to think it was. Clearly, we are not looking to keep children out of the home. The goal is reunification. If it would have been determined safe to return the children to the home, the state would have done so. Mr. Jensen indicates that the home was cleaned up in a matter of weeks, and then there was never a problem. I think the court will see from their de novo review that that is not the testimony. At some point during the case, the family did move into a new trailer, and the dirty home issue was not as severe to be concerning and a safety issue. However, at that point, we had issues with the mother being noncompliant with her medication. Dishonesty issues with the mother were discovered throughout the case, and there was an incident where the child had been abused sexually, both children actually, but only one conviction occurred as regarding the children due to a plea.
The termination is not based on that.
No,
sub 9, is that correct?
That's correct.
So the termination was based, is this correct as to both parents on sub 2, 7, and 6?
I want to say with regard to...
Is that right?
It was 2, 5, 7, and 6 for the mother, 2, 7, and 6 for the father.
Okay, as to any one of those bases, let me try this again. Is there any, is there one of those bases that's proven without hearsay?
I believe so, Your Honor. I think that 5, the mental health issues of the mother, 7, with the 15 out of 22, as when we filed, we were at 22 months out of home. When we had the termination hearing, we were at 2 years out of home. I think the record is replete with best interests evidence, as the court will find. There were plenty of witnesses testifying as to the children's best interests.
Before we get to best interests, don't we have to touch on the fitness issues?
That's correct.
Did the judge ever make fitness issues specifically in this case?
I don't know that he specifically used the word fitness, but he did find that the right should be terminated under those sections. So he did find that there was neglect under subsection 2, continuous neglect, as well as
would you say the case against the mother is stronger than the case against the father?
I would, Your Honor, and that is a concern that I had even bringing the case forward. It gets difficult when you have a parental unit, when one parent is more detrimental than the other parent. However, there's no indication from Tom M's actions that he intended to leave. He did testify at the termination hearing that if that was what would be needed, then he would.
Did the case plan ever require him to leave?
I don't think that it's up to the state to require a parent to leave. I think that that can be mentioned to him, but I don't think that he can order a relationship to be ended. So the case plan did not require him to leave, although it was discussed.
Does it matter if they're married persons?
I don't think that it does. I mean, if they're going to engage in a relationship when they have a choice between their children and that relationship, I don't know that it's in our province to order no contact. They had a long-term relationship prior to the children being born. It had been discussed that he would leave. He'd mentioned it several times, never made any indication that he would do so.
So you all are treating this as a family unit?
We are. Okay. Quite frankly, for argument's sake, we could say that he could parent without Brandy S., but we never got to see that. So there were issues with Tom M. as well, but the biggest piece was his inability to protect the children. Mr. Jensen indicates there was no other evidence of any abuse outside the hearsay statements. Well, first of all, I would urge the court to review those statements that he's looking at, because I think that they would have came in under the strict rules of evidence anyway.
Under what?
I'm sorry?
Would it come into evidence under what rule?
I think that they would come in under different things. First of all, some were offered not for the truth, so they weren't even hearsay. Some were offered under the medical therapy diagnosis exception. Some came in under the state of mind exception. So I don't believe that all of those statements that came in from the children were hearsay. I don't believe Tom M. has suffered any prejudice from the way that things are, the status quo of the law.
So when the children told the counselor that the abuse, that was under the medical records?
I believe so, Your Honor. And I do want to note for the court, too, we've been talking about how old the children were.
But assuming that it's hearsay, and we have stated that you can't put reports in that are hearsay in a termination proceedings, why would we let other types of hearsay in?
If you want to assume it's hearsay, which I don't believe it is.
Assume it's hearsay.
I don't think that we would allow it in. I don't.
You don't think we should allow hearsay in a termination proceedings?
The strict rules of evidence don't apply. So I do believe that there should be some leniency. And I think that the court, in its discretion, can determine what comes in and what doesn't. But I do agree that the reports have not been allowed from prior case law. I think that the reason that the case law has come down the way that it has is because terminations are different than a lot of cases that have been ongoing for years. We have so much turnover with caseworkers. You've got young children who may not be able to testify. Mr. Jensen in his brief points out that things should come in under the hearsay exceptions because they're more reliable that way.
So we should relax the rules because it's just termination of the parental rights?
I'm not asking for relaxing the rules, Your Honor. That's not what I'm saying. I think that it should be up to the court's discretion as to what is allowed and what isn't. And I don't believe that the court allowed hearsay in. I don't.
How did this case get from an adjudication of a cluttered house to a termination of parental rights without even the termination of the fitness of the parents?
I think that it is a determination of the fitness of the parents or the unfitness of the parents. That the wording may not specifically be there, but I think it's implied in the court's order.
Well, wouldn't it be a better procedure if you had other issues that occurred? If you want to have an adjudication of those issues with regard to parental fitness, mental health of the mother, and then develop a plan to resolve those issues so that the parents have a chance of rehabilitating themselves before you terminate?
The case plan, Your Honor, does work on those issues, such as the mental illness and those things. The state of the
law... Was that part of the dispositional part of
it? It was, Your Honor.
Okay.
It's the various dispositional hearings. And quite frankly, Your Honor, the state of the law is that we don't necessarily need to have an adjudication. We can go straight to the termination hearing. So I could have come out with a petition at the get-go and filed without an adjudication.
So. I'd like to return to the hearsay question for just a moment. Our jurisprudence on the reports indicates that they can't come in unless the author of the report is available, and then they come in because the author is subject to cross-examination.
Right.
Is there anything in this case that would have prevented cross-examination of these children?
The state did not put them on, but they were not unavailable. The parties could have called them. And I did want to clarify for the court, I had the date of birth, they were 9 and 7. At the time of the termination, so instead of 4 and 6, if that makes any difference.
So the state would not have resisted the an attempt by the parents to bring the children in to testify about sexual abuse or the absence of sexual abuse?
The state would have asked for some safeguards with the counselor working with them and possibly doing something in camera, but would not have opposed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't believe we have any time for rebuttal. We do not. So we will go on to the next case of the day, which is Latzel versus Gaughan. Mr. Brown, good morning.
Good morning.